We're gonna try this and see what transpires. A bunch of different styles to fill our desires. It's gonna be super fun and full of wit. Robert Bacon is the host and he's full of it. We're gonna try it. After we like it, maybe we'll try it again. Maybe not though.
Welcome to Try This Podcast, a podcast where every week we have on a comedian and we do the podcast that they have always wanted to do. I'm Robert Bacon. One of the things that I really love about this podcast is that we get to try new ideas, and if we really like those ideas, we're allowed to just go back and revisit that idea as many times as we like. That doesn't mean that ideas that we only do once weren't good, but maybe we just got the most of that idea at the time. An example of this is the Jimstown Cult podcast that I did with Ben Larrison. That is easily one of my favorite episodes, but I don't think we're ever going to go back and do that one again because I think we got all that we could out of that idea. Well, this week we revisit the idea that we could probably do every week if we really wanted, and that is Get Lit with Kevin Reeder. Kevin is one of the best improvisers in Chicago. He's also the director of operations, I think it is, over at Cards Against Humanity. You know, that awesome game? Yeah, he works there. Super cool. Anyway, Get Lit is a podcast where we drink and review literature. Last time we revisited our childhood with the Berenstain Bears review. I think it's just titled Berenstain Bears Review, and I didn't actually title it Get Lit. I think it's about like episode 14 if you want to check that one out. You don't need to listen to that one to get this one. Anyway, we're back this week and we're talking about poetry. We're picking out some of our favorites, some of our least favorites, checking out some urban legends. We aren't huge poetry nerds, so this isn't a technical review, but more something that everyone can relate to. If you are a big poetry fan and we made some sort of mistakes, or you just want to put in your two cents, please let us know. Email us at trythispodcast@gmail.com. Anyway, this episode is a lot of fun. Ladies and gentlemen, this is Get Lit. Get Lit. We're back, Kevin Reeder, Robert Bacon. We're back for Get Lit, episode 88. We're taking a look at poetry.
Oh man!
And to get us started, as you know, Malort.
Malort.
Cheers.
Cheers, buddy.
Oh God. You know,
that would hit my top lip.
Oh.
And I got the most taste. Hold on, I'm gonna open it.
Yeah. You better chase it down. You just gotta let it go straight down the back of your throat. I think, you know, we're here in Chicago, so we've had a lot of Malort. You've introduced it to a lot of people. I think I'm numb to it anymore. I don't enjoy it.
Dude, I do it all the time, and it's still bad.
Still gross?
Yeah, and I'm washing it down with an old style, another Chicago thing.
Are we at a Cubs game right now?
I don't know. What is with Chicago is known for amazing food and everything else. It is, how can we make the worst alcohol?
You know, I actually heard recently that Jepson's has actually moved their production out of Chicago. They're no longer a local Chicago thing.
Why am I drinking this then?
I don't know. But they still have all of the Chicago emblem and stuff like
that. Yeah, it's the flags on there. Well, that's like, I don't drink 312 anymore because it's owned by Budweiser.
Yeah, it's not as good.
It's not as good. It tastes different. And also it comes in crappier packaging that like falls apart when you try and take it to take it out to the lake. That happened to me one time.
You're totally right. You know, I think I actually got to the bottom of why. I know. Don't worry, gang. We're gonna get into
we're gonna
poetry.
Get to the poetry. We're gonna don't get worry. To
we're getting
but this
lit
is get lit. And part lit. Of it's yeah. beer it, and alcohol,
booze, totally. Booze. So I was talking to a beer rep the other day, and he was telling me about the production of 312. So they've obviously moved most of the production down to St. Louis.
Yeah, out of Goose Island, where it used to be made.
Exactly. So the water source used to be Lake Michigan. Yeah. Now it's probably the Mississippi River.
Oh, gross.
Just out of St. Louis.
And midway down.
Uh-huh.
Gross.
It's terrible.
I mean, it starts great up in Wisconsin.
Oh,
if you're up there, it's like not that bad yet.
Yeah. Totally.
But by the time you get down there, I was touched it. Gross.
Oh, man. I've got family in Iowa. I love them. I love you guys. But that is some muddy water.
That water's muddy.
And if you've ever been to Chicago, Lake Michigan is not bad. It would be better if Milwaukee cleaned up their act, because Chicago has very strict rules, and not as much as Milwaukee. And that's whenever there's a problem, it's always when the water starts coming down from Milwaukee.
Oh, really? I didn't even know.
Yeah, but if you, in the, you know, right when that lake melts, the water's beautiful.
Oh, it's gorgeous.
It's crystal clear. Yeah. It's great. And then as the summer goes on, look out.
Yikes.
Anyway, you guys remember all our episodes. This week we're doing poetry.
That's right.
We're changing things up a little bit.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Instead of the deep narratives of the past and in-depth looks at novels and things like that, and great works of nonfiction about past presidents' lives, we're going to take a look at short form literature. So excited. I'm a fan of poetry. I'm not a huge reader of tons of styles across a lot of genres or anything like that.
That's weird, because your name is Kevin Reeder.
Namesake, right?
Like, I eat bacon every morning.
Every morning?
Yeah.
I definitely read something every day. Whatever
it
is.
It's true. There's like a stop sign.
It's something, yeah.
A cease and desist letter.
Yeah, oh yeah, yeah.
Anyway, all right, let's get into poetry. Do you want to go first? Do you have something you want to do?
I would love to. Okay. I'm also really excited to talk about poetry.
Pick your favorite three.
My favorite.
Otherwise,
three
it's going to be 2 hour long.
Okay. All right.
I'm going to pick my favorite three that I picked out.
Your favorite.
My favorite three poems. These aren't our favorite three poems. These are three poems that we thought would be interesting to talk about.
Right.
And I definitely think I found three interesting ones to talk about.
Great.
What do you think? What's your first one?
I definitely chose shorter pieces.
Okay.
So,
same.
I'm just going to read it. E.E. Cummings. You are tired. You are tired, I think, of the always puzzle of living and doing, and so am I. Come with me then, and we'll leave it far and far away. Only you and I understand. You have played, I think, and broke the toys you were fondest of, and are a little tired now. Tired of things that break, and just tired. So am I. But I come down with a dream in my eyes tonight, and knock with a rose at the hopeless gate of your heart. Open to me, for I will show you the place nobody knows, and if you like the perfect places of sleep. Come with me. I'll blow you that wonderful bubble, the moon, that floats forever in a day. I'll sing you the jacinth song of the probable stars. I will attempt the unstartled steps of dream, only until I find the only flower which shall keep, I think, your little heart while the moon comes out of the sea.
Wow.
No. Dang. Right?
Awesome reading that, by the way. I kind of want you to read mine. Oh, my God. I love that one. That one... Go ahead.
I read it, so you have a pure emotional reaction to it.
I'm going to do it in dumb people talk.
Okay.
Because that's the only way I could speak.
Sure.
Man, are you sick of life? Life sucks, right? I'm like, I'm sick of it. You're sick of it? I'm sick of it, too.
Yeah.
Hey, but you know what? There are some really cool things about life. And here's some awesome things about life.
Yeah.
Check out the moon. The moon is really cool, right?
You ever seen the moon?
Just sit down. Hey, whenever you think life sucks, and it does, and it's full of garbage, just like... remember that there's awesome things in life. That's what I got out of it. What did you get out of it?
I definitely got a lot of those things out of it as well. I think for me, E.E. Cummings is probably one of my favorite poets of all time. If I've read the most poetry of one particular poet, E.E. Cummings is up there for
me. Super famous poet.
Super, yeah. Born in 1915. His dad was a professor at Harvard. So he kind of comes from this weird elite world where poetry was, he was supported as a poet and an artist by his family. So
he didn't have anybody to tell him hey, stop that shit.
Yeah.
Get back to cutting wood.
Yeah.
You know?
You're never going to make it as a poet.
Yeah. Kill yourself. That's what they would probably say.
But for me, E.E. Cummings has a tendency to play with style and form, and it's really, really well and challenged the norms of what poetry was. He was very abstract and thought outside of the box before a lot of people played with the form and styles of poetry. Mm-hmm. And that doesn't always come across in the readings of his work. Mm-hmm. A lot of it is very, very visual as well. The choices that he makes with the words and the placements of punctuation and capitalization and things like that are incredible choices that he makes. This one, for me, I think he always finds the small moments and makes them important and meaningful.
Yeah. That is huge. I feel like that ends in there, too. Ooh. All right, dude. That was awesome. Cool. All right. I'll do mine.
All right. Sweet.
Another heavy hitter that I know that you will know.
Oh, yes.
And I had to pick my favorite of his. This is Edgar Allan Poe.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
A Dream Within a Dream.
Oh, man. Classic. Love it.
Take this kiss upon the brow, and in parting from you now, thus much let me vow. You are not wrong who deem that my days have been a dream. Yet if hope has flown away, in a night or in a day, in a vision or in none, is it therefore the less gone? All that we see or seem is but a dream within a dream. I stand amid a roar of a surf-tormented shore, and I hold within my hand grains of the golden sand, wholly few, yet how they creep through my fingers to the deep, while I weep, while I weep. O God, I cannot grasp them with a tighter clasp. O God, I cannot save one from the pitiless wave. Is all that we see or seem but a dream within a dream?
Nice, dude.
Cool.
Nice.
I didn't do as good of a reading as you did.
I
got to get this. I had to get. Yeah. I feel like I should have read it. I should have read it before.
Taking a quick look at it before you read it. You stumbled through some moments, but you brought it through. You found a really awesome strength in there that I've actually read that poem a lot as a kid.
Mm-hmm.
Edgar Allan Poe is always an author that fascinated me in my early times and influenced a lot of the stuff that I thought about the world because he was so weird, and I've always been interested in weird, fascinating things. And you found a lot of strength and defiance in that third stanza that I don't think I ever have read meaning into before.
Oh,
so that was cool.
Okay.
I think
yeah.
To me, what's beautiful about it is you interpreted it in such a way that I've never interpreted it. And I think that, more than anything, really breathes the strength of what poetry as a form can be and can do for people.
Yeah, because there's so many different ways to look at this.
Yeah, it's so personal.
And for me personally, I wrote down notes. What a nerd.
Yeah.
I enjoy this. I enjoy this because it's two scenes. Oh, we are getting lit, you guys.
Yeah. Let's remember. It's called Get Lit.
For me, I read it horribly, but for me, if you ever look up this poem, it is two parts. And it's two scenes that are in juxtaposition. I've been drinking. Yeah. Just a position.
just one position.
Just one of positions
it's
one
just
another.
Just one position, and then there's just another position.
It's like when you watch a good TV show that cuts two scenes together that seem to have nothing in common at first, but then have the same theme.
Yeah.
And I've always loved that, and that's what I love about this poem, because both of them have the same theme but different tones. Mm. The first part is him talking to somebody, kissing somebody who is dying. And letting them, and that's the dream within the dream. And then the second part is him trying to hold on to life and it's slipping through his hands and him talking about dying.
You crushed that analysis, dude. Honestly, you did. You did it, Bacon.
Thanks, dude. Yeah. My favorite image is the part where he's trying to hold onto the sand, and sand obviously represents time, but having it slip through your fingers, so the sand slipping through his fingers, and back into the sea, obviously death. In Edgar Allan Poe, the sea is death. always. Like the dark ocean, sea, and sand is life, and it's slipping through your hands.
And when he was writing, the sea was a mysterious, creepy fucking
thing. It still is.
It is, yeah, you're
right. We know so little about it.
Yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. And there's this, the act of picking up sand and letting it go through your fingers, there's something like so basic and human about that. Like everyone has sat at the beach and stuck your hand in the sand and just let it run through your fingers. And you kind of get lost in it.
You could feel that moment.
Yeah, right.
In your own fingers. You really could. Yeah.
It's like sitting down in the, in grass and like picking grass for no reason. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
Everyone's
done that.
Sounds
like something I did on a soccer field. When the ball was on the other side of the field.
I'm just going to sit down. I don't need to stand. It's like I've got like 40 seconds to see the ball coming with a pile of children. Anyway, keep going.
I totally agree with that. And mine is just like, there's something about like watching the sand fall, and I think that's why hourglasses are so popular. I'm sure they had better timers, but hourglass.
They were pretty accurate, man. Yeah.
Anyway.
You talked a lot about theme. You talked a lot about imagery. Mm-hmm. The thing that piece had that really touched me as a listener, because I think it's very different. I think poetry is written and is meant to be spoken aloud.
Yes.
Sometimes.
Yes.
And that one, it's different when you're reading it because you're focusing on reading it, so it's hard to listen. Like when I was reading my piece, I didn't hear it in the same way that you heard it because it was interpreted through my personal lens as the orator, and you were the listener. So for me, it was, there's such this beautiful tone and resonance and rhythm and internal rhyming schemes that don't feel like gross or poorly planned out or anything like that. They seem so natural. That was soothing. So when I can couple that soothing quality and attach it to the theme, it almost made me accept death as a natural thing and something that I wouldn't fear. There you go. That's deep cuts.
Wow, that is. And I'll say, no, we're getting deep. No, let's get deep.
This is Malor starting to hit me.
We'll do another one in a bit.
Yeah, dude. Oh, no.
All right, let's get on to, let's go on to your
second
one.
Yeah.
My God. This podcast is going to be 3 hours
long. You turned it well. I don't know. I'm not looking at the recording time, so
I want to do one more by E.E. Cummings, and maybe
so good.
I know.
Right,
we'll try to keep it quick. I picked out four from him, but this next one is more of that style over maybe message. I don't know. I don't want to seed it too far. Yeah, I don't want to seed this too hard. But so I'll just read it and maybe whatever. Okay.
All
right. Okay. Here we go. E.E. Cummings. Title is I left parenthetical A.
Okay.
A leaf falls, oneliness.
That's
it, dude. Right? I know.
I'm like, I already have like three things to say about that, and I was like logging them in my brain, trying to remember them, waiting for the rest of it.
All right,
that's great.
Say
dude.
Those queef.
Say those queef. Thanks. Say those. Read it one more time.
I'll read it again. It's
read
pretty
it one
quick.
More time.
A leaf falls, oneliness.
Oneliness, right?
If I'm reading it correctly,
yes. Oneliness. So what this actually goes with the last theme that I get. One of the things I thought of like a leaf fall, oneliness is the saddest thing that I say all the time, actually, is we all die alone.
Jeez. Man, we picked some dark shit
we
today.
Did. I get that of like, I get the leaf falling off of a tree. The leaf dies before that, but we're talking about poetry and symbolism and not science of the leaf falling off the tree at that point of like, even if there's a bunch of leaves falling off a tree, it's still its own moment, and it's still its own death. Mm, what were the first two things? A leaf, right? We're all like extras in a movie. Like, there's a million people in the background.
Oh, man.
Right?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Who are just, like, filling in. But every single one of those people have their own stories and have their own things. Mm. It's, oh God, I love that poem. It's great.
Wow. That's what'd
awesome. You get out of it? Why'd you like it so much?
I wanted to bring it to the table more than anything to talk about the form, style, and the decisions that he made as a writer to put it down outside of theme and things like that.
Okay.
I'll have you take a quick look at it and just the visual of this is how it was printed in a piece.
Oh, I didn't even know that.
Right.
You know what, you guys? Also, I'm going to go ahead and have a link on the website to the actual just like a probably just a Google Doc of the poem, so cool. You guys could take a look at them if you would like to do that.
Yeah.
And just to explain it, everything's in just two letters all the way down, except for one is the only one.
Mm-hmm.
Also, it looks like a falling leaf.
Exactly.
Ines is the last one, like it fell on the ground. God, that is beautiful. Right?
Yeah,
God, it's so good.
He fucks with you in different ways, but it's hard to read sometimes. You're like, what am I... You look at it. First, you look at it. It's like almost like a painting.
And you think you're having a stroke.
Yeah, you're like, oh,
you're like, I smell toast. What are these letters?
I don't understand. How do these go together? And so it takes you out of it to get into it. And then you get into it, and you like it, and you appreciate it in a different way.
I love it.
And so as beautiful as a writer and theme and idea that he could be, he also challenged a lot of those notions as well. And so that's why I was like, hey, I think this is what this guy's all about. That influenced me a lot. I did a lot of bad poetry writing back in my day. And it was before I had read any E.E. Cummings.
Okay.
I had written a bunch of stuff, and I had played with form and style and visuals in a lot of those same ways. And someone was like, have you ever read E.E. Cummings? And I was like, no. Who is that? Right? I didn't take poetry 101.
Your voice
101.
Really changed.
This is
a girl.
I'm not good at things. Yeah, it was.
Dude, also I would just like to throw it out there as a theory. Maybe just his space key was broken on his typewriter, and he could only use the return, and then he's the typewriter. So maybe it wasn't genius. Maybe it just was he had a deadline to get a poem done by the end of the day.
Oh, these fucking editors want something? Here.
All right. Well, now I'm going to change up. This needs a preface, a preface.
All right.
An intro. This needs a preface. This is the
face before the
We're going to switch it up, you guys. This is William McGonagall, and it is titled The Tay Bridge Disaster. And let me tell you a little bit about William McGonagall, all right? William McGonagall was born...
Not related to Professor McGonagall.
Unfortunately.
Okay, cool.
William McGonagall was born on March 1825 and became a Scottish poet / actor. He was most well known for writing awful poems. I read up on
he was known for it.
Yeah, I read up on this guy, and it's just sad. He says he wants to be a poet, and everyone keeps telling him no. There are even accounts of him reading his poetry to crowds and then just pelting him with cabbage and other vegetables. Again, this is back like in the early 1800s where like there was no entertainment.
Right.
Like somebody balancing a board on their hand was like blue. Juggling was witchcraft. This guy reading his poetry, people hate it.
I mean, I've seen Braveheart, so I know how the Scottish treat things.
Yeah, maybe the Scottish are just idiots, but you could tell me what you feel about this. He wrote this poem about the Tay Bridge disaster, and so I'll tell you about that. On December 28th, 1879, Tay Rail Bridge at Dundee, Scotland, collapsed as a train was passing over it, and everybody who was on that train died.
Wow. All right.
So he wrote a poem about this.
So
about this awful tragedy.
Emotionally. All right, here we go. Well known for bad poetry.
Beautiful railway bridge of the silvery tray. Alas, I am very sorry to say that 90 lives have been taken away. On the last Sabbath day of 1879, which will be remembered for a very long time. Oh, the ill-fated bridge of the silvery tray. I now must conclude my lay by telling the world fearlessly without the least dismay that your central guiders would not have given way. At least many sensible men do say, had they been supported on each side with buttress, at least many sensible men confess. For the stronger we our houses do build, the least chance we have of being killed. That's the end.
You know,
I have a bunch of thoughts about this, and I would like to know what you felt before I get into my long rant about this person.
So many thoughts. Number one,
yep,
we're both comedy nerds. We're into it.
Yeah.
We love doing stuff in the scene.
Yeah.
If you're looking to put up a character for like a tight five for an SNL audition or something like that, please be Bad Poet, who takes an important moment in history, a local history, and turns it into a bad poem.
I am so surprised no one's really like, this guy isn't like very well known, because this is hilarious.
It's so bad. The only other thought I have about it,
yeah,
other than the moments of snickering through it, because it is ostensibly bad. I don't know what makes it bad, because it's personal, right? And if he was really, truly emotionally affected, I don't want to judge somebody on that.
No, he's not emotionally. There's no emotion in it.
Yeah.
There's no description in it. Yeah. Everything is very straightforward.
Right.
Everything is very simple rhymes.
How are you cashing in on a poem, man? He is.
He is, dude.
Go
ahead. What else do you have about
it? Oh, man. It reminds me of like all of the bad songs that happened around 9/11.
Did you have the same thought?
Yes!
Oh my god.
It just reminds me of all that bullshit.
You guys, William McGonagall is the Alan Jackson of his time.
Wow. I
was going to say, how would you feel to be a family of a survivor, right? Like a family member of one of the people who died, and have to hear or read this garbage?
It'd be so bad.
And I say, if you guys don't know Alan Jackson, Alan Jackson wrote a song about 9/11. And Alan Jackson's interpretation and his style is equivocally similar to this person's. And you know why? I'm going to go ahead and just play you a song. I'm going to go ahead and just play you a part of the song that Alan Jackson wrote.
I'm just a singer of simple songs. I'm not a real political man. I watch CNN, but I'm not sure I can tell you the difference in Iraq and Iran.
I'm just a singer of simple songs. I'm not a real political man. So those two things of just like saying like, hey, I'm just a song. I just sing simple songs. My songs aren't very good, so you shouldn't credit me.
Yeah.
I'm not real political, so we shouldn't get into politics. Yeah. I watch CNN, but I'm not sure I could tell you the difference in Iraq and Iran.
Oh,
this is a part of his song where he literally just says, I have no idea about the rest of the world.
I'm dumb.
He has a part in his song where he just talks about how dumb he is. And that is presented like a thing of like, hey, you know what? I don't know much, but I know I love you.
I'm just like you. Buy my record.
Yeah.
I mean, I grew up in a home where Alan Jackson was played fairly regularly, I guess. You know, he had a couple of pop country hit songs. Way down yonder on the Chattahoochee. It's hotter than a hoochie-coochie. Gross. Anyway, the only other comment I want to make about the original poem by the guy from Scotland was that I was delightfully surprised how much the language held up. It felt very modern.
I don't know. I'm not like,
you know why? You know
it.
Why? No, yeah. You know why?
Yeah.
Stupidity transcends time. All
right?
Just
That's
like you
quote
listen to
right
Alan,
there.
Just like you listen to Alan Jackson say that he doesn't know the difference between Iraq and Iran. Alan Jackson didn't have 5 minutes to spend in 2001 looking up the difference between Iraq and Iran on Alta Vista.
So he
wrote a lyric about it. This idiot just try to cash in on a tragedy just like he did, and it makes me upset. And I guess, you know what? The poem has won because it evoked emotion out of me. I am upset. It's
You're
better than
upset.
Nothing.
You're
I'm still upset. I'm upset about this poem.
Right.
It's 100 years later.
It's
200 years later. Almost 200 years later.
Yeah.
And I'm upset about this poem.
That's why I was impressed by how the language held up in relevance, right?
Go.
It didn't feel... Yeah. Malort!
Ugh. All right, so we're on the home stretch. You're
why does this? I think it got worse for me.
The rubber band taste gets worse and worse. Like burnt rubber bands and sadness.
If dirt could taste rotten.
Yeah.
That's...
Like if you just drank water from a cemetery. That's what Malort tastes like. You should buy some.
All right.
What's this poem?
I chose Bukowski. Bukowski, obviously, dirty old grumpy man. Mm-hmm. Drank a lot.
What year was he around in?
1920 to 1994. Lived Ooh. In Los Angeles. Drunkard. Super pop icon for, like, he was the modern poet that people actually looked up to.
You mean like Del Close for improv?
Mm, mm-hmm. Right. He is the Del Close of poetry in the same...
I don't know who that's an insult to.
I don't know. Maybe nobody. Maybe society. Maybe the culture of the time.
Jesus Christ. I wish 1 year after I die, one person is talking about me, let alone whatever happened to this guy. All right.
Yeah. So I'm going to do the ice cream people.
I saw this episode of South Park.
All right. Here we go.
This is a good one.
The lady has temporarily... I fucked this up. All right, here we go.
Start over. Here we go. Ready?
The lady has me temporarily off the bottle, and now the pecker stands up better. However, things change overnight. Instead of living to Shostakovich and Mozart through a smeared haze of smoke, the nights change. New complexities. We drive to Baskin-Robbins. 31 flavors. Rocky Road. Bubble gum. Apricot ice. Strawberry cheesecake. Chocolate mint. We park outside and look at ice cream people. A very healthy and satisfied people. Nary a potential suicide in sight. They probably even vote. And I tell her, what if the boys saw me go in there? Suppose they find out I'm going in for a walnut peach sundae. Come on, chicken, she laughs. And we go in and we stand with the ice cream people. None of them are cursing or threatening the clerks. There seem to be no hangovers or grievances. I am alarmed at the placid and calm wave that flows about. I feel like a leper in a beauty contest. We finally get our sundaes and sit in the car and eat them. I must admit, they're quite good. A curious new world. All of my friends tell me I am looking better. You're looking good, man. We thought you were going to die there for a while. Those 4,500 dark nights, the jails, the hospitals. And later that night, there is use for the pecker.
What a great way to say that. Go keep...
Use for love. And it is glorious, long and true. And afterwards we speak of easy things. Our heads by the open window with moonlight looking through. We sleep in each other's arms. The ice cream people made me feel good, inside and out.
Kitty.
Mary McCheese did not like that one. Dude, I'm sorry. If you heard a cat meowing, that's my cat, and she just wants attention. Wow. Again, in poetry of just like so few words explaining a whole scene in my head, there is two different lives and worlds of like doing of things and just being like, and I feel like we all, people who don't have addictions necessarily, all go through that. Cause like I have fun drinking and obviously I'm getting that and like going to bars and doing that kind of thing. But that's like a different kind of fun compared to the fun of like just going and doing what would be considered like good old wholesome fun.
We're just two home folks in love, and every Saturday night we go out at 8 p.m. and we go to Baskin-Robbins, and there's nothing wrong with that.
No, and that's a vice too of like going to Baskin-Robbins, enjoying sugar, and him comparing those worlds. And it's not, they're the same world. We all live in the same world.
Yeah.
It's just different social constructs. It's amazing.
Yeah.
How does it feel to you?
You know, I think Bukowski, you know, you can look back and be like, he seems like a bit of a misogynist, but
A bit? I don't think he could be a bit of misogynist.
not just a tiny little bit?
I don't think he could be a little racist. I think either you're racist or you're not racist.
You're one or the other.
If you're the only way you could be a little racist, if you're like, I hate Irish people. Scottish people I like, English people I like, everybody else I like, I just hate the Irish.
You know, as a dude who used to be an archaeologist and has studied history in a lot of different contexts and ways, I always have to look at history through a lens and within the context with which it was defined and the world and the circumstances that somebody grew up in. There's nature versus nurture, right?
Yep.
So
yep.
People aren't necessarily born an asshole. They're created to become one. And yep. That could be a reflection of society, family, a lot of other things. That doesn't mean that you can condone somebody being a dick. I don't want to say that. So I don't want to pass excuses on for somebody for being a certain way. Never want to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Treat people as equals. Be good to everybody. But let's look at things in a historical context, right? And just analyze it in a different way, only for education and,
also to help people in the future to be like, who is this person?
Right.
There has to be a way to deal with somebody like that and, what happens to them.
Hey, if somebody comes across this podcast 100 years from now, how are they going to interpret it in a world that we weren't ready for?
Exactly.
They can view us in ways that we could be doing something right now. Mm-hmm. That we are so unaware that we're doing them, that they'll be like, those assholes.
Yeah. Ooh, he has a cat. Cats cause cancer, and we all know that now. That's why cancer has been so prevalent for the entire of human existence, because we've been living with cats.
That's it. Cats are the reason.
I don't care if cats cause cancer. I'm living with this cat. It's like that person who's like, I don't care if smoking causes cancer. I'm going to smoke. I love kitty cats. I'm going to live with this kitty cat.
As weird as it is, it's totally not that far off from exactly what I'm talking about, man.
Dude.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
Deep and smart. Oh. I'm going to get to my last one. Are we ready?
All right. Let's do it.
This one's great, I feel like, to end on, actually. And this one is not attributed to anybody.
Yeah.
This is just a poem that we could talk about, because many people think that this short poem is actually attributed to Ernest Hemingway.
I've been drinking. Ernest Hemingway.
Yeah, that's it. Ernest Hemingway. Ernest Hemingway.
Ernest goes to Hemingway.
Oh, Vern. Hey, what are you up to, Vern? Writing poems, Vern? Ernest Hemingway. And I thought it was him too, but a quick internet search shows that this isn't true, and it's been documented as being around since the early 1900s. Anyway, it's a short poem. Very short, just like one that you explained, and I'll get to it. The poem is, this is also known as the saddest short poem.
Oh.
For sale. Baby shoes. Never worn. That's it.
I've heard that poem before.
You've heard that. How do you feel about that one?
Hey, man, that, there's a lot going on there.
For sale. You're already like, oh, wow. So it's like the end of something. It's a transition.
Yep.
Whenever you have something for sale, it's definitely in a transition.
Yeah.
Cool. Baby shoes. Oh, geez. That's an awful. Right. Now we know it's awful. God. Right.
Yeah.
Never
you're,
worn.
You're making it worse.
Never worn.
You made it
the
so much
worst,
worse.
The worst.
A true comedian. Because at least if they.
Exactly. Right.
Was this a comic? It has to have been a comic.
Well, I'll tell you, it doesn't go to Ernest Hemingway. It doesn't go to anybody. It was actually part of something was seen in a paper way back in the day. And then that was everything was contorted and then switched. And then it just became kind of an urban legend kind of thing. And then it was attributed to a famous author at the time. And it wasn't. It's one of those things of a myth that doesn't hurt anybody that we all think about. But anyway, it doesn't matter where it is. The reason why I kept this one is because it's a societal poem. Something as a society, we've all, it's conformed. There's no one author. We all agree that this is, I don't think,
that
and it's only, it's six words.
All of our poem, man.
Yeah, it's six words. Could you make something sadder in six words?
I don't think so.
That's sad.
I really don't think so.
That's sad to everybody. I mean, I could make up two words that are sad to you. Or like three words that are sad to you that are sadder than that.
Hit me with it.
Three words.
Yeah.
That are sad to only you and not as sad as this poem.
Yeah.
You have AIDS.
There's something about the succinct quality about that that sets it. It's the set. We do comedy. We like jokes. Yeah. We like writing jokes.
The setup and the punchline.
Right.
This is one of those.
The setup. Oh, it sets you up in like a, oh, we've all sold things.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, baby shoes. That's innocent.
Ooh, yeah, okay. You've had kids. Oh, yeah. My kid ran out of these shoes. They're done.
Yeah. Got
too big feet.
You know. Sometimes.
Cool. Never worn.
Never worn. That is a fucking
switch.
Joke, dude.
Switch.
You got me.
That is set up punchline.
Yeah.
If
that were a joke in a comedy show, I would have laughed my ass off.
Right?
As a quote unquote poem.
Yeah.
Hits me in the heart and the gut in a way that nothing else could. You know, we want to thank our sponsors, Jepson's Malort, unofficially.
And MarioMaps.com. That's...
Yeah, do it. Plug it.
Anyway, thank you guys so much for listening to Get Lit. I feel like we've all learned a lot, and we should all read more poetry, right?
We should.
Anything you want to say before we leave?
I feel great.
Get lit, get lit.
That is this week's episode of Try This Podcast. If you like this podcast and want more, you can listen to all our episodes on trythispodcast.com or on iTunes, Stitcher, or Pocket Cast. You can contact us by emailing us at trythispodcast@gmail.com, right on our Facebook page, or leave us a review on iTunes. That's it. Make sure to tune in next week. We'll have on a new guest, and we'll do the podcast that they have always wanted to do. I'm Robert Bacon. Keep trying.
We went and tried this and saw what transpired. This particular podcast filled our desires. We had a lot of fun and it was full of wit. Robert Bacon was our host and he's full of shit. We went and tried this, now that it's done, it's been done, but never was before we did it. You're drunk.